Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of F This Movie. Fuck it. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com, scary movie love for scary movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley and I'm super excited for this week's show because we are, what are we calling this episode?
We'll get to it. I don't know.
Okay.
Well, yeah, it's the ultimate creep show.
Oh, I like the ultimate creep show.
Yeah.
Done. You just named it, so that's great. That makes my life so much easier.
All right.
So we're going to be creating the ultimate creep show by ranking the anthology segments from Creepshow, Creepshow 2, and Tales from the Dark Side, the movie. I am joined for this very special episode by the man who thought of this idea,
yeah.
Mr. Adam Risky.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. This is one of the shows that I look forward to the most all year.
Our Scary Movie Month show?
Yeah.
It's always super fun.
I'm always very, very excited about it. And yeah, we'll also probably touch on the Shudder series Creepshow because I've seen the first three episodes. Have you seen all three?
I've seen
of them?
Two and a half.
Okay.
So,
all right.
And I think the second half of the third episode is one that people are saying is the best. And I haven't seen it yet.
It's
good. The Bruckner one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say that episode three is my favorite by a pretty wide margin
of
the three episodes.
Damn it. Okay.
So, yeah.
All right, well, then we'll get to that, and I will not fully be able to participate. But
that's okay.
Happy Scary Movie Month. Hope everybody's having a great Scary Movie Month. We're about halfway at the time that we're recording this. Hope everybody's having fun with the Scary Movie Challenge. Every time you watch a horror movie during the month of October, go to fthismovie.com and leave a 7-word review of that movie, and we'll read some of our favorites on the show, like now.
Oh, all right.
Look at that. You can go first.
Okay. Stuart Gordon.
Yes, Gordon. I am Gordon.
Trilogy of Terror, a new low in gender pay disparity.
Will Benson of Ravenous. F. Mary Play, Carlisle, Pierce, Oregon Trail.
That's a good one. Richard A. Tasker for It Chapter 2. Dreamchild really went big and dairy.
I wrote that one, too, because it was a Dreamchild one, and
yeah.
I was like, who else is going to appreciate this? We are the two biggest Dreamchild fans.
No, I was very pleased in It Chapter 1 when there was Batman and Lethal Weapon 2, both one screen, or splitting a screen. I don't know if this was a single screen.
Right.
But Dreamchild took over.
Yeah, had its own, had the theater all to itself.
All to itself, and then I do like... Minor spoiler for a chapter two inside the theater that the dairy theater made it all the way to You've Got Mail.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
That was nice.
It hung on till 98.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a spoiler for it chapter two?
It is now.
Louis Viljean of Rogue. Pleasant Outback Croc Spotting? I'd rada not.
I like that. My Rada love has like reinvigorated this fall because
really?
I met her at Monster Palooza.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And she's just like such a classy woman
and
very nice. And we talked about Phone Booth. Did I tell you about like my discussion with Rada Mitchell?
I don't feel like you did.
So I asked her. I was there for, there was nobody at her table really. So I was talking to her for a few minutes and I asked her, I said, what's your, I gave her the Tom Atkins question. I said, what's your favorite of your movies?
Yeah.
And she just goes, well, I like this one. And I forgot what she pointed to, but she's like, I also like this one. It's high art, but I don't know if you'd like it. It's pretty indie. And I was like, I watch indies, Rada. Like, I'm not just some Monster Palooza goon.
Right.
I haven't seen high art.
Oh.
Yeah.
You could have really impressed her. It's her and Ally Sheedy.
I know, but I rewatched Pitch Black, and my Rada fandom bumped up a little bit again.
How about your Cole Hauser fandom?
He's terrifying. He's in the top 5 scariest actors.
Who are the others, just for the sake of our audience? I know the answer to this question, but...
So I can't remember 4 and 5 right now.
Yeah, I know.
Because of the fear. Kevin Gage is always number one, specifically Wayne Grohl, Kevin Gage. And then Richard Brake,
yeah,
who I'm convinced is not acting. And number three is Cole Hauser.
Wow.
Yeah.
We got to fill out 4 and 5.
Yeah, I know I have the list somewhere.
Yeah.
It's in like my secret notebook here.
Somewhere. No Ted Levine.
No, because Ted Levine's like a teddy bear to me because of the Mangler
yeah.
and like Nowhere to Run.
Numb Nuts!
Fast and Furious.
That's his best line like... in the Mangler is when he yells Numb Nuts.
Oh, when the thing falls on him?
Yeah.
Numb Nuts! I love his relationship with his brother-in-law in that movie. It's just like, it's what I aspire to with my brother-in-law.
I love his relationship to Ann Acids in that movie.
Yeah. He's great. He's just like constantly vomiting and sweaty and... It's real good.
Yeah.
Is it your turn or my turn?
Yours, because okay. I just did Roddy Mitchell.
Okay, Cullen for The Evil Dead. Ted Raimi should have also played The Cabin.
Lindsay of Bliss, where everyone knows your blood type, ... Norm.
I have to see Bliss. Is that an inside joke?
George Wendt is in it.
Oh.
So.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Brett Cullum for Phantasm, tall man unleashes balls to your face.
We're not above it.
Nope.
We're not above it. Nope. Monkey of Pet Sematary 2019. Twisted Sister was better in the 80s.
I agree. Okay, Aaron Keith for The Reef. Couldn't sink my teeth into this one.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Stuart Gordon, another one from Stuart of Invisible Ghost, 1941. Title promises literally nothing, still doesn't deliver.
I had that on my list. This is a cheat, but it's so funny that I had to add it on here. Jeff McIver for Clue. Leslie Ann Warren is ridiculously preternaturally hot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's true.
Yeah, we speak the same language, my friend.
Eric Asperschlager, our own Eric Asperschlager of Sorority Babes in the Slimeball Bolorama. Childhood fascination with VHS cover art justified.
This is one of my favorites of the month. Kelly Shea for Lake Placid. Pullman in khaki may rival Dernbutt.
Another one speaking your language because it mentions Dernbutt.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it mentions Pullman. So we really, both of us win there.
Yeah, yeah.
Richard Tasker of The Devil's Reign. Shatner screaming, people melting, Borgnine surprisingly welcoming.
Dan Snyder for Man's Best Friend. Somebody find Lance a coat that fits.
Michael Pomero, our very own award-winning filmmaker, Mr. Michael Pomero of Casadega, directed by Anthony de Blasi. I was de Blasi about this de Blasi joint.
I like that one too.
I had to text him separately just to say how much that one made me laugh.
It was good, yeah. Jeremy Wickett for The Wolfman, 1941. Larry, you're a werewolf, also clearly adopted.
I know I have a Jeremy Wickett on here, too. Oh, here it is. Okay, Jeremy Wickett of The Fog. Ghosts stop killing after quota. Good union?
Okay, Chris Keeney for Funny Games 2007. It's kind of like Funny Games 1997.
Cullen of Society. Fist bumps in the 80s were rough.
Jack C. for Friday the 13th, 1980. The Den of Thieves to Halloween's Heat.
Yes.
Yeah, that was one after my heart.
Because you love Den of Thieves.
I slowly have. Yeah.
I knew it.
Yeah, yeah. It's Redbox royalty.
It is. The first movie written and directed by a Redbox.
Mm-hmm.
Mark W. of The Bride of Frankenstein. Bandages are removed. Goth culture is born.
Marcus Killer B. for Don't Torture a Duckling, a movie I've never heard of, but there's been a couple of
Fulci,
reviews for
baby.
That. Oh, it's Fulci? Okay, that makes sense. Awful sequel to Kill a Mockingbird.
Yes. Brian Pope of Creepshow, a movie we're going to be talking about tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Someone please give Bernie Sanders his cake.
I have a Brian Pope for Rosemary's Baby, the good one, not the one with Zoe Saldana. This is why we ignore old people.
Matthew Nicely of Scream 3 coming in with a 30 Rock reference. Careful, Ghostface. Emily Mortimer has bird bones.
Was that in 30 Rock? Somebody says about
she had avian bone syndrome. She played a character with avian bone syndrome. She had bird bones.
Yeah, it makes total sense why I've had a crush on her all these years.
Because
she's
bird
got
bones?
The birdie thing. Yeah. Follow that bird. Our own Rosalie Lewis for The Fog, 1980. Last Night a DJ Saved My Life.
Yes, very good.
Yes.
Dan Snyder of Midsummer. Family gets hosed, friends end up smoked.
That is great.
That is dark, Dan Snyder.
Yes. Our friend Sonia Mansfield from The Sonia Show for The Blair Witch Project, which she and Margo have a episode on Dorking Out. I need to listen to. It's Josh, 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 Josh.
Very nice.
Yeah, I love how much she's just like, tell me where you are, Josh.
I have a Sonya Mansfield one as well for The Love Witch. This Love Guru sequel is really weird.
Erica Brownlee for Tales of Terror, 1962.
Nice.
Nothing to see here, nothing but brick.
It has been so much fun watching so many movies for her the first time this month.
Yeah.
For me, it's stuff I've seen, but like to experience stuff, it'll come up when we're talking about one of the segments tonight.
Okay.
But to experience some of this stuff through her for the first time has been a true joy. It has been so much fun.
Has there been like a standout one that she's gone for the most?
The one I think she loved the most was The Sentinel.
Oh, I've seen that.
Yeah, it's good.
That movie's crazy.
It's really good.
Yeah,
it spoke to her for a lot of different... It was like New York at a certain time, fashion models. The cast was amazing.
Yeah.
Martin Balsam, some lesbian stuff. It was like everything she's into was all in the same movie.
Where would you stack rank the lesbian stuff and Martin Balsam?
The great thing about her is she doesn't discriminate between the two.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good. Mac McIntyre for Happy Death Day to You, 20, which I forgot came out this year.
That was a movie from this year.
Which isn't possible. I think it came out in 2008. but it was, what company offers same-day parachuting lessons?
Frank Levesque of Starry Eyes. Good thing I don't have any ambition.
True that. And then I got one last one from our own Jan. An American Werewolf in London. More wolf kills where werewolf kills more.
Very nice.
Yeah.
I have a few. Alex Keel of the Monster Squad. Goonies Mom still not offering much supervision. Brian Street of Wishmaster 3 Beyond the Gates of Hell. Do you wish for Cinemax? I fucked it up. Do you wish for Cinemax production values? Brett Cullum of Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. Masked killer steps aside for killer masks.
Yes.
And one of my favorites, Jeff Quinn of Candyman. I was told there would be candy.
I introduced one of my friends to Halloween 3 for the first time.
Yeah.
And yeah, he really went for it and it made me so happy.
Yeah.
I think I need to go back to, I had a plan of like, I need to write a great horror performance on, I was going to write about Neve Campbell in the Scream franchise,
yeah.
But it's Atkins in
Atkins
Halloween
all
3.
The way.
I mean, it's like Day-Lewis, but better. Day-Lewis is never that honest on screen. And I feel like Atkins is emotionally naked and literally naked.
He is literally naked, right? Isn't that the one where he shows his butt?
Yeah, and he also puts khakis on, and I don't think he has any underwear.
No, Atkins goes full commando.
Yeah.
He talks about that a little bit in that 80s horror documentary, In Search of Darkness.
Okay.
He talks about his nude scene and how he no longer has a butt. He's a very good sport about basically everything.
I really want to see that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good.
Good.
It's fun. Speaking of which, have you seen anything scary lately?
Yeah, I'm going to talk about all movies I've seen for the first time October. Because I've seen Tales from the Dark Side, the movie was my movie number 30. So I've been really going through it. But I'd say like two-thirds of them have been revisits or stuff that I'm showing to other people or things I hadn't seen in a long time and was revisiting. But some of the new stuff, I've had like this amazing run where like I've kind of liked everything. So the one of the early ones I watched was The Changeling. I watched that for the first time.
As did I.
Okay. What did you think of it?
I liked it.
Yeah.
It was like the eighth of 15 movies for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I probably didn't see it under the exact right circumstances, but I liked it quite a bit.
Yeah. I liked the atmosphere of it a lot.
Yeah.
And I told Mike that it inspired a nightmare for me.
Interesting.
The night that I saw it, because I couldn't get the little boy going, "Where's my medal?" like out of my head. And it kind of screwed me up. And okay. It was like weird because when I was watching the movie, I wasn't freaked out at all.
Got it.
But then after it was over, in the quiet of night, in my room where it was dark, it was just, "Where's my medal?" And it reminded me of, remember, the only, like, one of the reasons why I it's not a bad movie, but I could never watch Raw Meat ever again.
Okay.
Is because all I hear is, "Mind the door! Mind the door!" So Where's My Medal is in that
Got
camp
it.
Now. It's in the box set.
Okay.
Of annoying earworm quotes. But one thing that I was kind of, I don't know, I couldn't reconcile with The Changeling was I didn't understand where George C. Scott's kind of opening trauma factored into anything in the rest of the story, except maybe that he was more susceptible to being open to the afterlife. Like, why?
Sure.
Like, I didn't get it. Like, he could have just been like a single man and it would have
been
the same
thing. There's a
point
at which it makes sense.
Okay.
And then they pretty quickly, when he thinks it's one thing,
yeah.
But they pretty quickly dispel that, no, it's not that thing.
Yeah.
It was a boy, not a girl, basically, is what it comes down to.
Yeah.
And, yeah, at that point, his connection makes less sense.
It's, yeah, it's kind of odd. But, it doesn't, like, hurt the movie
right,
or anything
right, right.
at all. It was kind of like a less sexy version of Ghost Story. It kind of gave me the same vibe.
Less sexy?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, what are you hanging on to in The Changeling that's sexy?
George C. Scott, baby.
Yeah. He's not yelling enough, though.
No, not.
I can only
not
get hard when
much.
He yells. Like in The Exorcist 3 when he's just like, "It's not in the file."
He is so good in that movie.
He's amazing in that movie.
Yeah.
That movie's
It is real good, and so much of it is because of how great he is in that movie. That scene where he like kind of breaks down and starts crying, it's like, I don't see characters do that in movies. That's amazing.
Yeah, and I love all the stuff where him and the priest are going to the movies all the
time.
Oh my
gosh, it's so great.
And he just flashes his badge and that's his ticket.
Yeah, yeah.
It's great stuff.
Yeah.
I watched, in my continuing journey through the Friday the 13th franchise.
Yes.
I still have 6 left. I haven't watched that yet,
okay.
But I watched part 2.
Okay. Oh, that's right. We were texting about this.
Yeah, and I was distracted because I fell in love with Vicky. I really like the movie. It's very well paced.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the most professional one, almost. It's just got like a real like straightforwardness, and it's just a good slasher movie. But Vicky, my God, she's like, you made a joke last show, an imp wearing angel's wings, but she's like a little bit naughty but heavenly. And then she
a
literally
naughty when she puts on the weird rust-colored underwear.
She puts on the rust-colored
the
underwear,
ill-fitting underpants.
But doesn't she put on like actual like perfume? So maybe that is the heaven sent.
Maybe it might be heaven sent.
Poor kid.
I know, right?
Yeah, she was giving me like Karen Allen, Marion Ravenwood vibes.
Okay.
I was digging it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm happy that I'm going through the series because I'm really liking most of them.
Yeah.
And I think 2, 4, 5 and Jason X are my favorites. So
okay.
Far.
Yeah. 2, 4, and 5 are among mine.
Yeah.
I'd probably throw 3 in there too, but not.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's good.
Yeah.
I just like 3.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't seen that one in a while.
Yeah.
Would
you
say
it's been a while? It's been a while since I
fucked things up. Oh, so I poor Aaron Lewis. I am continuing my way through the Hellraiser series.
Oh boy.
So a couple years ago I watched Hellraiser 3 for the first time.
Okay.
It's kind of
yeah.
For some reason, maybe it was my bottom of the basement expectations. Maybe it was because I was just marathoning movies one day and it was like the third movie of the night. but I kind of enjoyed Hellraiser Bloodline.
That's the one that's all over the place,
yeah,
right?
Where it's in like
space, but also in
the
like 1800s. Victorian England.
Yeah, and okay. Adam Scott's in it, yeah. And stuff. But it's the director took his name off of it,
right.
So it's an Alan Smithy.
Because it was Kevin Yeager.
Yes.
Okay. I don't remember hating it. Like,
no.
I saw Hellraiser movies that I liked way less.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, like, I haven't seen any of the direct-to-video ones. Yeah. But
I think that's all there is from this point on.
It is.
I think you're out of the theatrical.
Yeah, I definitely wanted to make sure that I saw the theatrical ones. But I just really like this series. I like Clive Barker's vibe altogether.
Okay.
Like, whether it be Hellraiser, Midnight Meat Train, or Nightbreed. I just kind of find myself gravitating towards it. So it gave me kind of that thing that I wanted from it. And, you know, for a space slasher, it's like not quite Jason X, but mm-hmm. It's better than Leprechaun in Space.
I could see that.
So, I mean,
I could see that.
And I was happy to see the woman from Dazed and Confused, and then she was also on ER, and she played Anthony Edwards' wife. Do you remember
Never
her?
Watched ER, so okay. I don't know.
I forgot.
Who is she in Dazed and Confused?
She's brunette. She's okay. With, like, Parker Posey's group.
Is she Wiley Wiggins' older sister?
No, it's not Michelle Burke.
Right.
It's another one. She hasn't been in a whole lot
All right.
after that. But because I watched ER and because I watched Dazed and Confused a lot back in the day, like, I had a big crush on her, so I was happy to see that she showed up in Hellraiser Bloodline.
Okay.
So you've
basically talked me into revisiting Hellraiser Bloodline.
Good.
So, way to go.
I did a better job of selling the movie than its director.
Do we know why he took his name off?
I think they said that they needed to do reshoots because it was a Weinstein debacle. And when he couldn't, I think he like either couldn't come back or the stuff that they wanted him to do, he didn't want to do. And then by the time the movie was released, it wasn't enough of what Kevin Yeager wanted, where he wanted his name on it, and the second director didn't direct enough of it for him to able to have his name on it.
Got it.
So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I kind of liked it. I have, like, Miramax Hellraiser, like, 30 movie set,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah.
And, yeah, 3 and 4 are on there, and then I could keep going if I want.
Christine Harnos.
Yes, that's her.
Is her name.
Yeah.
And I see who she is in Dazed and Confused. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I watched Christmas Evil for the first time.
Yeah, you did.
I really liked it.
How can you not?
I really, really liked it a lot. I mean, like, it fits in perfectly with, like, a sleepaway camp, you know, whatchamacallit, Blood Rage type
yeah.
of movie where it's just... But the thing that I really liked about it was I thought the music was great, and then it has this, like, dream quality to it. Like, you feel like you're hallucinating the movie or
right,
watching it,
right.
like, while you're half asleep. And I thought the lead actor, Brandon Maggart, who was really good at being, you know, what I imagine Joaquin Phoenix is as the Joker, sort of. Like, he was just, like, real unsettling and creepy. I thought the thing with him and Jeffrey DeMunn as his brother was, like, oddly interesting for, like, this cheapo slasher movie. And of course I won't spoil it, but the ending, I mean, is just like, I had to rewind it. Like, I just couldn't believe
it's one of the great endings of
it's
all time.
I knew what the ending was, but I'd never seen it
right.
And even knowing what it is, like, just the way it plays out,
yeah.
you're just like, wow, that's
yeah.
a choice.
Yeah. Would you say it's your second favorite thing ever produced by Brandon Maggart?
Yes, because for those of you who don't know, he is the father of Fiona Apple, one of my favorite singers of
yes.
all time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She's awesome. And then I watched House of Usher for the first time.
Okay.
I love Vincent Price. He's one of my favorite actors. I love, like, all of his Corman Poe movies, because even if they're not great, they're just like comfy blankets
yes,
of movies.
For sure.
And, like, they're perfect for, like, your lights are out and you've got, like, you know, your orange Halloween lights on and you've got candles lit. It's just like atmosphere. It's like the Ghoul Log on Shudder, basically, but with Vincent Price. And I was won over by a certain actor that I wasn't won over by before in other movies. I'm becoming a Mark Damon guy.
Interesting.
I'm just like, he is bland, but he's exactly what I want in this movie as this counterpoint to Vincent Price.
Okay.
And I don't know. I just liked him in this one. He looks like he should be in like the Four Seasons, but I don't know. It was good. And then the thing that I think is kind of one of the reasons why I liked Erica's 7-word review for Tales of Terror so much is that, yeah, like if you think about it, there must be like 20 movies where Vincent Price is the guy and then the woman is either buried alive or in a wall or like
locked in a thing, whatever Barbara Steele's in at the end of Pit and the Pendulum.
I know, it just seems like it's every movie, right? But no,
it's because he makes all those Edgar Allan Poe
for
movies.
Sure, yeah, Poe had a thing, yeah. So
kink.
Did you ever see the Masters of Horror, The Black Cat?
I saw when they screened it at a massacre.
So good.
It was so good. I haven't seen it since then, but I remember really liking it,
it's
like
really,
being pretty
really
knocked
terrific.
Out by it.
It makes me want to see the play that Jeffrey Combs does.
Which they tried
Nevermore.
To make into a movie.
Did they?
And then they couldn't.
Oh,
the Kickstarter
right.
was unsuccessful, basically.
That's right. That's a shame.
Which is crazy to me when I think about some of the things that have been crowdfunded. How could that not have been?
For sure, yeah. And then one thing I'm also noticing, because I'm watching a lot of 60s horror, is I love the last 5 minutes of any 60s horror movie. Because it's always like this slow, methodical thing. And then the last 5 minutes, it's just like, oh my God, there's 5 minutes left. Like, what's going to happen? And they have to like hurry, wrap everything up.
Right.
It's like a Harold in improv. It's great. It all comes together. It's like the Griffin Newman quote is where it's like, it pays off like a slot machine.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good stuff. And then the last thing is I watched Cat People 82. Which I had never seen before.
Okay, I saw that because I think I saw your review for it.
Yeah, and I'm a fan of the Val Lewton Cat People.
Yeah.
So like I think that one's like it's probably my favorite of the Val Lewton movies. And I thought that this one was like weirdly underdeveloped at times, but especially at 6 a.m. on a Saturday morning, sexy. Like, oh my God. Like, that's a sexy movie. And, like, I hadn't seen much Nastassja Kinski stuff, but, like, she's perfect for that movie.
Yeah.
No pun intended, because
perfect. I like it.
But, no, I just really liked... It's another movie where just the atmosphere kind of took me over, and, like, I really liked the obviously the David Bowie song that was later used in Inglourious Basterds.
Right.
And I think for, like, a remake, it's something that would be fun to double feature with the... With the Val Lewton, Jacques Tenure one. And I'm convinced that Malcolm McDowell is not acting. That's just him being.
That's who he really is.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you might be right.
Yeah.
I had forgotten again until they talked about it. I haven't seen it in years. And they came up again in that documentary. And they show some clips from the transformation scenes. And I had actually forgotten that there were, like, on-screen transformation
scenes. They're pretty short, yeah.
Okay. Maybe that's why I forgot. Because in my head, I was, like, thinking it was more like the Val Lewton one than it actually is.
Yeah. I thought it was kind of funny because they have a cat exhibit in the zoo. But it's just these bars where you could easily stick your hand through.
Yeah,
and I'm
right,
just like,
right.
I'm like, what is going on
Ed
with this
Begley
zoo?
Jr. learned the hard way not to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember liking that movie, but I haven't seen it in so long that's another one I need to revisit along with Hellraiser Bloodline.
Yeah, so I've got like this weird way that I'm picking what I want to watch this year.
Okay.
So like, I always feel like I'm missing out on something because, like, I'll be watching too many of my DVDs and then not enough stuff on Shudder or on Prime or something or on my DVR. So, like, I'm just going one TV, one Shudder. And one of the things I'm doing is my ad nauseum books.
Yeah.
So I just started at 1980. So I'm like, okay, I'll do The Changeling. 81, I'll do Friday the 13th, part 2. 82 was Cat People. So 83, the next one I'm going to do is The Hunger, which I've never seen.
I haven't either.
So,
wow. All right.
Yeah.
That's a cool way to do it.
Yeah, it's been fun. Because you're always picking your first choice. That's the thing.
Right, 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 right.
So that's why it's kind of rewarding. You don't feel like you're forcing yourself to watch stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
I've been working my way through all of the After Dark Horror Fest movies.
Oh, I remember those.
Which I think usually, like in Scary Movie Month's past, that is a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
But I've been watching enough other stuff that it hasn't taken over. And honestly, none of them so far. I'm only through the first eight.
Mm-hmm.
So I watched all the ones from 2006.
Yeah.
And they're all like okay to decent.
Mm-hmm.
None, I would say, are undiscovered gems, but I haven't seen one that I was like, what a piece of shit that was. It never should have been made.
Were any from directors who went on to have longer careers?
Mike Mendez did one.
Oh, okay.
He did The Grave Dancers.
Okay.
Bishimer? Yes. The guy that did The Grudge.
Oh, yeah.
Made one.
I rewatched The Grudge remake this month.
How's that?
I used to like it more than I did this time.
I've only seen it once, and I mean, you know, Pullman.
Yeah. I think you would like it for that reason, because part of it is a woman who's obsessed with Bill Pullman.
Well, so you and I have something in common.
So you are grudgeable. yeah, I don't know. I think like it gets so much mileage on what worked about Ju-on.
Right. Which I don't think I've ever seen.
I don't know if I have, because that and Ringu run together.
I've never seen Ringu either.
So much of it is just like the imagery, and then also like the setting. I don't know what it is, but like modern or like early 2000s horror set in Japan has like just an ambiance that I really kind of like. Like
okay.
Cairo had it in Three Extremes and stuff. It's just they really knew kind of what they were doing around that time. So, yeah, I don't know. You're fine.
The director's name is Takashi Shimizu. And
yes.
And he made, it's called Reincarnation. That was his entry.
Okay.
And again, that was one that I think I admired more than I enjoyed, because it was a little bit slower and more, like, kind of serious than some of the other ones. It was also the only non-American one, I believe.
Okay.
So I'm going to keep going with it. We'll see if it gets way worse. I don't know. I have the first four, like, I found sets on eBay for very cheap.
Okay.
I know they did one more run more recently, like 2015.
Yeah, because I think Michael Madsen was in one.
Okay.
But I can't remember what it was.
I don't have any of those.
It was about like a bear.
Lumberjack Man?
Yeah, that was.
Yeah, I've seen Lumberjack Man.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's more of a horror comedy.
Oh, okay.
I don't remember Michael Madsen being in it. I've seen it.
I don't think it was like a big role. I just remembered like when they were showing the preview for the series.
Right.
Like, he's a recognizable face, so of course they like put him in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was one called like Re-Kill or something that Scott Adkins was in that I was excited about, and it was not good.
Oh, that's a bummer.
So I've seen two of them so far. But,
okay.
Saw The Changeling. What else? I mean, again, I've been watching so much stuff with Erica. A lot of it, you know, she's seeing for the first time. We just, and I'm probably going to write something about it, so we won't talk about it much, but we just finished doing 15 movies consecutively. We did about 26 hours, 27 hours.
That was fun to follow.
Yeah, we finished the last one, and we were like, no, we don't feel like stopping, so we put The Shining on.
Yeah.
And then watched The Shining. Mm-hmm. But highlights from that were Lady in White was fun, because all the movies that I showed during the day were movies that our kids could watch.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of limited, but it was kind of neat to choose stuff based on that, because we ended up watching some older stuff like Horror of Party Beach.
I want to watch that. Once Erica said that it was like the 50s sci-fi drive-in trailer reel, I was like, ooh.
Yeah, it basically is. It's on Amazon Prime right now.
Okay, good.
So, and I believe it's I think Severin or Synapse put out the Blu-ray, Severin. And it appears to be their HD transfer. So,
good.
Sometimes Amazon Prime can be sketchy. But it's a really good transfer of a movie that's really, really fun.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Lady in White was fun, because my son seemed to really get into it. He enjoyed that. Overnight, we watched Cabin Fever, which I hadn't watched in years.
Mm-hmm.
I really like that movie.
Yeah, I love it. I've always really, really liked it.
So have I, but it had been so long, and Eli Roth had gone in a certain direction, and so I kind of forgot how much I liked Cabin Fever. I knew in my head that I liked it, but like, I couldn't remember if it was just like, oh yeah, I like that movie, but watching it again, I was like, no, this movie's really good.
Yeah.
I was appreciating the score and the photography more than I ever had before.
Mm-hmm.
And we watched the director's cut, which is out on Blu-ray.
Okay.
It's got some additional character stuff and then a couple additional moments of gore. And those I was pretty quick to spot. Like, I've seen it enough times that I knew, like, oh, that's new, that's new, that's new.
I'm just impressed by, like, it's pretty ballsy, like, when you think about, he just was like, I'm just going to put in whatever I want in this movie. And, like, nobody said, maybe you shouldn't have Deputy Winston in here or something like that. But, like, those are the things that make the movie the movie. And, I mean, yeah.
He even says as much. I started listening to the commentary. I remember the original DVD had, like, four or five commentaries, and I think I listened to all of them back in the day. This one just has one, and it's a newer one recorded by the whole cast, minus Jimmy DiVello.
Oh.
Is he in the top five?
He is, yeah.
That's what
I thought.
He
was, like, number five.
As soon as I said his name, I was
I'm
pretty sure he's in there.
Yeah.
He's not on the commentary, but Eli Roth says something to the effect of the thing that we knew at the time, that the thing that's going to make people want to watch this movie multiple times is all the weird shit that's in it.
He's right.
Yeah, like the pancakes or like Deputy Winston.
There were so many actors in that movie, too, that were... They popped up in, like, everything that I was watching, like, for a three or four year span, where I'm just like, Joey Kern is in every movie that I'm watching, or, like, Jordan Ladd and stuff like that. So, yeah, it takes me back to college, so I like it for that reason, too.
Is Jordan Ladd Grace? She is, right?
In Cabin Fever?
No, the movie Grace.
Yeah, she's in Grace.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a good movie.
I rewatched Club Dread, and she's Penelope.
She is Penelope.
I liked Club Dread more than I ever have.
I haven't seen it in a long time.
I don't know. I've got a weakness with Broken Lizard. Like, okay. I just think they're really funny. So I
need to see it again, I guess. I don't know.
It's fun. Yeah.
Bill Paxton. I mean, you know, it's got that going for it.
Yeah. Coconut Pete.
I know. Yeah, right.
It's not Margaritaville. It's Pina Coladaberg.
What else? I don't know. I mean, whatever. I'm going to write about that. And we've been watching a bunch of stuff. We've watched Slumber Party Massacre and Dawn of the Dead and Black Christmas. And we've been having a good month, you know?
Yeah. There's a few other ones I watched. Like, I'll talk about them in my reserve seating with Rob because they were in that list of, like, the five new to me's that I want to watch. But I did watch Qui-Gon and Warlock.
Again.
And... Just Before Dawn, and I liked all of them.
That's really a good list.
Yeah, yeah.
I really liked Just Before Dawn.
I really liked Warlock. Should I go to Warlock the Armageddon?
It's not as good.
Okay.
It has... because Warlock is Steve Miner, who we've already established, is awesome.
And Friday, too. Yeah. I mean, like, yeah.
Warlock 2, I believe, is Anthony Hickox, who we've already established is, like, just
good.
Okay.
Yeah, he's Hellraiser 3.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But Waxwork is pretty good.
Okay.
You've seen Waxwork?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Long time ago.
Yeah. It's, like, pretty solid.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably my favorite of his movies. It's a step down from Warlock, but there's enjoyment to be had, I think. I just saw them all recently for the first time when Vestron put out that set.
Yeah. I don't know. The thing that bumps me out is that the only one I think that carries over to Warlock 2 is Julian Sands.
Correct.
And there's no Richard E. Grant. But Richard E. Grant and Laurie Singer were my favorite part of the first one.
Richard E. Grant goes a long way towards making that movie work.
Yeah. And I just love how Laurie Singer's just like, yeah, put me in the most ridiculous makeup and put nickels in my mouth to ward me off from, like, Julian Sands spells and stuff. Like, that movie's just, and then, Mary Warnoff is the scariest thing I've ever seen.
Yes.
Like, oh.
I clearly need to rewatch Warlock also.
It's fun. But yeah, and Just Before Dawn was real good.
Yeah.
That was really, really good. I was happy to see Wishmaster's Chris Lemon.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I wrote a thing about Just Before Dawn once for Bloody Disgusting a year ago.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And got an email from the director, actually, that was very, very nice.
Nice.
Yeah. Your boy Lieberman.
Yeah.
Sent me a very nice email. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did it replace Satan's Little Helper as your favorite Lieberman film?
Yeah.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yeah.
What a relief.
But Satan's Little Helper is not as good, but close to the original Halloween. I love Halloween. It's not my favorite Halloween.
It's not my favorite Halloween either. No, so that's no. All right. What is your favorite Halloween 3?
It's the same one as yours. It's 4.
Nice.
Yeah.
Dwight H. Little. You
it's.
Boy.
I mean, it. What's the Ellie? What's her name?
Ellie Cornell.
Ellie Cornell is like one of the greatest horror.
Yes.
Characters. I
Did
love
you
her.
See that Danielle Harris is going to be at Days of the Dead doing yeah. clown photo ops?
Yeah.
That's think... weird to me.
It's not normal.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. No. Adult Danielle Harris in clown gear seems more like...
Gacy?
Or just like a weird fetish thing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. There's something that feels weird about it to me.
Yeah.
Oh, well. And that means it's time to get into our main topic.
That's also the official theme of Show and Tell.
So we're going to be ranking all of the segments from yeah. Creepshow, Creepshow 2, and Tales from the Dark Side, the movie.
And up front, why Tales from the Dark Side, the movie? It's because officially slash unofficially, it is the what most people consider to be the real Creepshow 3. What there's two things that I've heard. One is that it was picked up in an interview where Tom Savini basically said it's the real Creepshow 3 because Romero and King and John Harrison and he all worked on all three of them. And then also Creepshow was originally supposed to be a TV series after Creepshow 2. They couldn't get the rights to the name, so they changed it to Tales from the Dark Side, which was a popular show, which then turned into Tales from the Dark Side, the movie.
Right. So this has a lot of the creative team behind the Creepshow mm-hmm. films. Really just the Romero involvement.
Mm-hmm.
And rewatching some Romero stuff this month, he has creeped up into my top five directors of all time.
That's great.
Like, I've always loved George Romero, but yeah. He's in the top five.
Yeah. What have you watched of his?
The Dark Half,
mm-hmm.
Creepshow, and Creepshow 2.
Cool.
And Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah.
Erica and I watched that for the first time, and she was pretty knocked out by it.
I really want to rewatch Martin, but I don't have it.
I'm waiting. There's supposed to be a Blu-ray coming out.
Is there?
Okay. This year or early next year, so I'm waiting for that.
Yeah.
Same company that's supposed to be putting out Dawn of the Dead on Blu-ray.
Yeah, I was blown away by Martin when I
yeah,
saw
no, it's super good.
Real, real good.
And we have plans to watch Season of the Witch, and I mm-hmm. want to show Erica Day of the Dead, because she was... Okay. commenting on some of the effects in Dawn of the Dead and how gross they were, and I said, oh, you have no idea how yeah. fucked up it gets. Wait yeah. till you see Day of the Dead.
Yeah, they really go for it in that
oh,
movie.
Oh boy, do they.
Yeah,
I think it has the best gore effects of any movie ever.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't combat that. It's not my pick is obviously Wishmaster, but
it's oh, okay
it's Wishmaster.
Yeah. No, those are great.
Yeah,
those are great,
but it's like whatever.
We're
and splitting
Dead Alive has great ones.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, but you could also throw, like, Evil Dead 2 in there, and there's a lot of other ones, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gosh, I don't want to choose.
No, I don't either. And we don't have to.
No, we don't have to. No. What we do have to do is rank these fucking segments from these anthology movies.
We do.
Are we going worst to best?
Yeah.
That's the way that makes sense to
and
me.
Then we'll do where if it's higher on your list, we'll wait.
Okay.
Vice versa.
That makes sense.
Okay. So number 14.
Yeah.
Dead Last.
Yeah.
I think we'll probably agree on this one.
Probably.
Old Chief Woodenhead from Creepshow 2.
I have that at number 14 as well.
Oh, wow. Is this segment racist?
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't mean to be at the time.
But it's racist in, like, a lot of ways.
Okay.
So, Dorothy L'Amour and George Kennedy are presented as being like these salt of the earth types
acting in a community theater production, by the way. What is happening? I know George Kennedy is capable of giving a good performance. I believe he won an Oscar for Cool Hand Luke.
Yeah.
What is he doing in this movie?
I don't know, but I thought their performances were so the pinnacle of badness of their performances in this segment was when they both get shot.
Oh my gosh.
And they don't act in a way that anybody who has ever shot with a shotgun would act. Like, in a spoilers for A Simple Plan, somebody flies across a room. In this one, they just stand in place like somebody stepped on their foot.
Right.
And then George Kennedy even just moves around.
He
takes a few steps forward yeah. before, like, I think just resting on a sack of potatoes. Like, but, I mean, there's a lot of icky things in there. Like, she, Dorothy Lamora's has all this dialogue up front about, you know, the land that they live on is predominantly Native American, and about, you know, you don't owe these people anything, and like they just bleed you dry and everything like there. They take advantage of you. And then later there's an actor who I don't believe is Native American playing a Native American.
Holt McCallany.
Yeah, who's from Fight Club. He's a good actor. He's been in a lot of good stuff. But like, this is the only time I've ever seen him like this.
Yes.
And it's odd. But the biggest thing that bugs me about this segment is that it's long, and they set up like the first 15 minutes where it's a three-hander of Dorothy Lamour, right, George Kennedy, and then the other actor who's playing kind of the leader of the tribe that's on the land. And none of those people really factor into the rest of the segment,
right,
because the statue outside of their store is Old Chief Woodenhead, and then he goes for revenge for the deaths of George Kennedy and Dorothy Lamour, and he kills Holt McNally and then his two cohorts. But it's not like in Pumpkinhead or something like that,
right,
where like,
right,
they're seeking revenge. It's just the statue takes it upon himself.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the segment, the leader of the Native American tribes comes and says, like, now you're at rest. And I'm just like, when was this ever, like, about that? And it, like I said, I mean, like, another thing about it is it's just so drab and ugly,
yeah,
to look,
yeah,
at, and it's long.
It feels amateurish.
It does, like, yeah.
This is a good time to say I don't think Creepshow 2 is very good. Like,
okay,
I can totally watch it,
yeah,
again and again. I've seen it a bunch of times, and I get in the mood to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Halloween 5 was coming up a lot yesterday, because apparently it was the anniversary of Halloween 5. And Halloween 5 is not a good movie that I sometimes feel like watching. And Erica said, why do you feel like watching it? I said, well, because it reminds me of October, because, mm-hmm, like, AMC shows it all the time. And so that's what I think of. It's like, oh, it must be October. Fear Fest is going.
Yeah.
Creepshow 2 is a lot like Halloween 5, where I totally feel like watching it. Pretty often I will revisit it. You know, I've seen it a bunch of times. I don't think it's very good. I don't think it's a very well-made movie.
I used to like it more than I do now. I think that there's, we'll get to it, but there's one segment in the movie that I like, and then the other two I kind of tolerate. And we'll get to the wraparound stuff in the interviews later, but like you said, I mean, it's something I could definitely watch several times more,
right,
but I recognize that it's the least of the three movies
easily.
Yeah,
yeah, I think in my ranking actually most of the low stuff is from Creepshow 2.
Yeah,
speaking of which,
mm-hmm,
my number 13, mm-hmm, is the wraparound from Creepshow 2.
That is higher on my list.
Okay. So what would 13 be for you?
My number 13 is maybe one that I'll get some shit for, but it is They're Creeping Up on You from the original Creepshow.
Higher on my list.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. What is number 12 on your list?
12 is the Creepshow wraparound.
Okay. That is higher on my list.
We're doing this the right way.
Yeah. Okay. Number 12 on my list is The Lonely Death of Jordy Verrill.
Higher on my list.
Okay.
We should probably just talk about them as they come up, because otherwise we're not going to get to them, you know, when we...
yeah.
All right. Next for me is the wraparound story from Tales from the Dark Side.
Okay. That's higher on my list.
Okay. Well, we can wait to talk about it.
Okay. What number are we?
I don't even know. 14, 13, 12, 11. We're at 10 now.
Okay. Number 10 on my list is Cat from Hell from Tales from the Dark Side.
Higher on my list.
Okay.
My 10 is The Lonesome Death of Jordy Verrill.
Okay. Let's talk about that.
Okay.
All right.
It's
number 12 on my list.
Okay. Yeah. It's my least favorite segment in Creepshow.
Okay.
And it's not even bad. Actually, I used to say, mm-hmm, the thing is, I don't think anything in Tales from the Dark Side, the movie, is bad.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anything in Creepshow is bad.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're both really, really excellent. Creepshow being the superior of the two. Like, I think Creepshow is a pretty perfect anthology. Jordy Verrill is my least favorite just because I used to dislike it because it was so tonally different and because I thought Stephen King's performance was so goofy.
Mm-hmm.
Now I love the goofiness of his performance. Like,
yeah, I've always been there. Like, I've never understood when people haven't liked the performance that I think it's perfect for what he's meant to do.
Yeah. Just the idea that he's just this author who's given a chance to play this big role in this movie.
He's just having fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
Tom Atkins, again, learned from the 80s horror documentary, wanted to play Jordy Verrill.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, and then was told Stephen King is already playing that, so he did them a favor by appearing in the wraparound segment.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, Atkins is a good guy.
Yeah, he is.
One of the performances in Jordy Verrill that I really like is Bingo O'Malley as the father and the doctor.
For sure.
Because I'm not convinced he's a real person.
Like, well, now with that name.
That's like an alien that came down from space and gave a performance. Like, he kind of looks like Michael Gambon if, like, you reanimated him and from a Pet Cemetery. Like, it's very weird. But all of those little, like, interstitials within the story where Stephen King is imagining what would happen if he takes the meteor in, or, like, if he goes to the doctor, or, like, his father's talking to him before he gets in the tub. I love those moments the most because they're so funny and surreal, and that's one thing that I love about the original Creepshow so much, is it's really adept at blending the horror and the comedy and never really, like, sacrificing the one or the other. The only thing that I don't like about Jordy Verrill, and I think this is my ranking, is more of a, I like almost everything in most of these movies.
Yeah, me too.
So it's not like ranking it low, like I don't like it.
Right.
But the only thing is, Creepshow in the EC comic sense is kind of punishing somebody who didn't do anything wrong.
Exactly.
So it's a little tough to take
that
his victory at the end, in quotes, is that he's giving up.
Right.
Which, in the circumstances, is totally understandable, but it's just also kind of casts, like, sort of a sadness around it that I don't know.
I see why it would work as a Stephen King short story.
Mm-hmm.
The arc of that happening, and I could totally see how that would play out. But I agree that in this format, it doesn't work as well, and that's why it's my least favorite segment in the film, because it doesn't do the thing that all the other segments do, which is sort of punish the guilty.
Yeah.
And this is doing something different. Like you said, it doesn't make it bad, doesn't mean I don't like it. It's just my least favorite in Creepshow.
Right.
And there's really only, like, Chief Woodenhead is probably the only segment I don't like in all of these.
Yeah. And, you know, we'll get back to, like, they're creeping up on you, but that's more of just, like, it grosses me out too much.
Understandable.
Than anything else.
Yeah.
It's not that it's bad.
Yeah.
Like, I think, when we'll get to that.
Okay.
So that was your number 10?
I believe so.
Okay. My number 9 is The Raft.
Interesting. Mine, I have it higher.
Okay.
I have the segment that you like from Creepshow 2 here at number 9, which is The Hitchhiker.
Okay. I have that higher.
Okay.
Okay. My number 8 is the... We could talk about this one. It's the intro and epilogue to Tales from the Dark Side.
Okay.
So I think I need to kind of just... for you, okay, I think, like, your affection for Creepshow is my affection for Tales from the Dark Side.
Okay.
So I like both of them. They're both 4-star movies for me. And that's out of 4, because that's the real scale, not this Netflix bullshit. But Tales from the Dark Side is, like, one of those instrumental movies of my horror fandom.
Okay.
Like, I saw it when I was 10, and it was a movie that I would go to the library and just rent over and over and over again for, like, an entire summer. And there's something about the cinematography and feel of the movies of 1990. I don't know what the fuck was going on with the cameras, but any movie from 1990 looks amazing. And they've got this warm, like, novelistic quality to it, especially the Paramount ones.
Yeah.
And, like, the one of the things that was interesting was, so Creepshow cost $8 million, and that's in 1982. Creepshow 2 cost $3.5 million in 87.
You could tell.
Yeah. And Tales from the Dark Side, the movie, cost $3.5 million in 1990, but it looks like it cost like $15-20
million. It does look like it cost $15 or $20 million.
It looks great.
Yeah, it does.
And those are those 1990 cameras. Yeah. It's just crazy. But this was my introduction to Debbie Harry.
Oh, interesting.
Then Blondie.
Okay. Right, right.
And then, like, of course, I was in the bag for Matthew Lawrence at the time, because who wasn't? But I don't know. There's just, like, as, like, a young kid, it had, like, the Hansel and Gretel thing right. that I liked. Obviously, that's playing up. It was super 90s, where it's just, like, it's a kid with the marbles and the paper route and stuff like that. And he's eating Chips Ahoy's and stuff like that. So I really liked it from that standpoint. And I just think that it's just kind of like an organic, simple, atmospheric opening and closing to the movie. So I like it for that reason.
But you have it ranked the lowest of the three wraparounds.
I do. Or actually, no, I have it ranked second.
Okay.
I think we might have missed one. Or no. I have it. Yeah. It's my second favorite of the wraparounds.
Okay, which one did we miss?
We missed Creepshow 2.
Okay, so we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
The only reason that I ranked the three wraparounds I ranked almost at the bottom was just because I couldn't compare them to
actual segments,
right. You know? And this one ranked the highest for me because it's the closest to having its own story. Like, I love the wraparound in Creepshow, mm-hmm. but it's basically just that beginning and end, and it works perfectly for what Creepshow needs to do, but it barely functions on its own. This comes closer to functioning on its own. None of them are supposed to. They're all doing what they're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't, with the exception of Chief Woodenhead, I couldn't in my right mind place them above something even that I wasn't crazy about. Because it's like, well, at least that tells me a complete story.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know why. Like, I was able to mix them in, but I think
sure.
a lot of it has to do with just kind of familiarity. And
right.
then, like, going to Creepshow 2, with that prologue, and it has interludes and an epilogue and stuff.
Yeah.
I rank that, like, a little bit higher than a couple of the segments just because it's so fucking weird. That I'm sort of intrigued by it in a way that I'm almost not with some of the other segments in Creepshow 2. Because it can't decide if it wants to be like a live action wraparound or an animated one. So it does both. And it's got Tom Savini playing the creep as like a newspaper delivery man, but he delivers the Creepshow comics.
Like you do.
And that's one thing that I found funny was like, this is the only one where the creep needs to have jobs. It's like, he's like a newspaper. He's like a delivery person.
Punching
he works
in,
at the
punching
post
out.
Office.
Yeah,
it's
right.
like, you can't creep for free.
No.
So it's just
creeping ain't easy.
And then I don't know, like it's got like Camp Candy animation. Which I was a big Camp Candy guy.
Who
so
wasn't?
Like,
kids. Well, NBC was right to think, you know what kids love? John Candy.
Yeah.
Kids can't get enough of John Candy.
It worked for me.
Sure.
Yeah.
I like the stuff with the creeper's voice when he turns into a cartoon character because that's Joe Silver from the Cronenberg movies.
Oh, is it?
The guy who looks like a Dick Tracy villain in some of the early David Cronenberg movies, that's Joe Silver.
Oh, shit. I forgot about that guy. Yeah.
So he does the voice of the creeper, and it's that great bass voice. It's interesting, as I rewatched it this time, this really seems like the template for Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah.
He's stylized to look like the original Crypt Keeper from the EC Comics, mm-hmm. not the Crypt Keeper from the HBO show. But just in terms of always cutting back to him and the way he sets things up and the way he's using puns mm-hmm. and the way he introduces each story, it felt a lot like the HBO Tales from the Crypt series.
Yeah. Yeah. And but it's so weird. Like some of the animated decisions, they're just like, this kid's getting bullied. So let's have him run away on his bike, but they're like, this will take a while, so like, here, let's do a story, and then we'll catch up, and then the Venus flytraps that he sent in for will eat the bullies.
Right.
And then, I am shocked that they went, like, okay, Tom Savini is a horror makeup guy, but he went with that mask for, like, it looks like something you would buy from Party City.
Right.
And But it does have, at the end, like in the end credits, where they're driving down that country road,
yeah,
and he's just like randomly throwing comics and stuff into the street. It's got that thing that I love in end credit scenes where like they let a scene run out.
Right, right, right.
And I'm just like, how long will the car go? And I'm just like, are they deliberately going slow? It should probably go off that road quicker. When did he stop throwing comics? Like, I was transfixed. So, just from a weirdness perspective, I ranked the interludes and epilogue and prologue for Creepshow 2 as my number 11.
Okay.
Yeah.
My favorite thing about Creepshow 2 is probably the score.
Yeah, it's good. I don't remember if that was John Harrison's,
though. It's not. It's Les Reed.
Okay.
But I have the score on vinyl, and I listen to it sometimes, and they include some of the creeper narration.
Oh, that's great.
Which is neat. Yeah.
Really, really cool. Yeah.
All right, so...
So we were at...
We have one more wraparound to go, and I...
Let's just talk about that one. Let's just get out of the way, because I had that as, like, number 7 anyway.
Okay.
Okay. So the Creepshow prologue and wraparound... Or prologue and epilogue. It's great to see Tom Atkins.
Sure.
I totally believe that he has sex books. That... Is it
Joe Hill.
Joe Hill found?
Yeah.
This is the thing that scared me the most when I was a kid about Creepshow. It's because when he says, I hope you rot in hell, and his voice changes.
Oh, yeah.
That used to scare the shit out of me.
Interesting.
And I always felt bad for the mom that she was in this house with this devil child and Tom Atkins' abusive father.
I always loved when we got to see the puppet outside the window.
Yeah, I wrote that down too. Yeah.
Which great. Is one of my favorite things about the new Shudder series, mm-hmm. is that they brought back, it's a different design, but they kind of brought back the, whatever you want to call that, Creepshow skeleton puppet.
I think they call it the creep.
Okay, yeah. So they brought back the creep and they've included it as part of the series. That's one of my favorite things about this series.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. And then how can you not like hearing Tom Atkins be like, horror crap. Like, every time I watch Creepshow, which is most years, I want my 7-word review wants to be like about horror crap.
It is, you know, kind of the same arc as the wraparound from Tales from the Dark Side, which is just like kind of a boring comeuppance.
Yeah.
You know, in this case, it's a voodoo doll in Tales from the Dark Side. It's Debbie Harry getting thrown into an oven.
Yeah.
I think both work for the movie that they're in. I just couldn't see placing the wraparound above any of the segments. Just
One thing I will say about, okay, so like more so with the Tales from the Dark Side Debbie Harry thing. So before she gets thrown in the oven, she falls on like a bed of like knives or something, or like
it's like stuff that you use to like sew up the whatever you're cooking.
One thing that's been,
there's a name for that. Neither of us know. We're just like, you know the thing,
the sharp
things, the sharp in the
things that stab you in the back, that aren't knives. I think it's just part and parcel with me watching 30 horror movies so far this month. But like, I've been thinking a lot of like, well, what would they tell the police? So like, when I see like, for example, House on Haunted Hill. And I wrote about this in the 20 years later. It's like, okay, Jeffrey Rush is missing, but they have all these checks made out to people for millions of dollars. What are they going to tell the police? Because it's just like, it's going to be suspicious.
Right.
So I had this thing with like Tales from the Dark Side where I'm just like, say she didn't get thrown in the oven. Maybe it's doing her a favor that she doesn't have to explain. Like when she goes to the hospital, it's like, how did all this stuff land on you?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm very practical with my horror these days.
No, that's good.
It's just like, what are you going to tell them? That's the final hoop to get over.
Well, yeah.
All right. So what's next on your list?
2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I'm at 7, I think.
Okay.
My number 7, we can talk about, it's They're Creeping Up on You.
All right.
Which is one of my lesser favorites in the original Creepshow.
Mm-hmm.
I have it a little bit higher up on the list just because that finale goes for broke so hard that
it's
how
so
could
nice
I
they
not?
Did it twice.
Yeah, well, yeah. How could I not include it? I mean, and this was the thing that fucked me up as a kid. Mm. Creepshow was probably the first R-rated horror movie that I saw sanctioned by my parents,
mm-hmm.
and this was the thing that I think gave me nightmares. I didn't have nightmares about roaches, but just the vision of them climbing out of E.G. Marshall.
Yeah.
And even the distortion of the voice on the intercom, mm-hmm. that it's like, you think it's the roaches talking? Like,
yeah.
What is this?
Yeah, like the way that Mr. White is talking
right
through the thing, and like, yeah, the way that the electronic distortion of his voice and everything, and the way that he's like, being very condescending at the same time. It makes it very eerie.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's so effective. Again, it's very kind of simplistic and straightforward. Mm-hmm. He's just, oh, okay, this miserable germaphobe is an asshole, and then roaches climb out of him.
Yeah.
So it's not the most sophisticated or well-structured segment in Creepshow, but I put it kind of in the middle of the pack,
mm-hmm.
Because that ending is so bonkers.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think that it's a great E.G. Marshall performance. He really commits to the bit, and then it's so effective in what it's trying to do.
Right.
For me, it's just I don't get a lot out of it because I'm not a gross out type of guy.
Sure.
It's funny because the thing that bothered you were like, you know, all the roaches are coming out of him and stuff like that. When they all are like going into him,
mm-hmm.
that part always is like, oh, thank God. Like, not like, oh, he's evil. Like, but like, oh, they're all contained in one place.
Right.
Like, thank God they're not all spread out all over the place. Because I think that bothers me more than the sheer quantity of them, is just that they're all over the place.
You should read about the production of the movie.
I have, yeah.
And about how many roaches went missing.
Yeah, yeah, no, thank you. Yikes. But, I mean, it's blessedly short. It's like 15, 20 minutes at most, which is nice. And I think that it's perfectly placed in the movie, too.
It absolutely is, yeah. Talk about going for broke at the ending.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, what is next for you?
All right, what number were you on?
Good question.
You're on 7, right?
So this would be your 6.
I have Father's Day at 6.
That's higher for me.
Okay.
My 6 is lower on your list. It's The Cat from Hell.
Okay. All right, yeah, I had that at number 10.
Okay. It actually shot up my list after rewatching Tales from the Dark Side
last night. Good.
Because it used to be much lower.
Okay.
It was the one segment in Tales from the Dark Side that I probably didn't like.
Mm.
It was my chief wooden head for that movie.
Okay.
Rewatching it last night, I still think it's a little too simplistic, again, in terms of what we want from these kind of revenge stories. But it's so well directed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's another segment that's probably better directed that we'll talk about, but I think it's the second best directed segment in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all the stuff with the cat terrorizing the senior citizens is kind of funny.
Yeah.
I think David Johansen is really good as the sleazy hitman. William Hickey, obviously, is always, you know, not even an actor.
He's scarier than the cat. Like, if they said, if it was, like, reversed and the cat was like, David Johansen, you have to kill William Hickey because he's freaking me out, then I would be like, yeah, I get it.
Watching it last night on the couch with Erica, and I knew this would happen. When the cat starts to climb into David Johansen's mouth, she starts at the top of her voice shouting and then making this noise. She just starts going, pff, pff, pff. And when it was all over, I said, why were you making that noise? Why was that your reaction? She said it was the only way I could keep the cat out of my mouth. Was to just spit and make sort of a raspberry noise. If you do that, the cat can't climb in. She had such a visceral reaction to it going in, and then again when it was coming out, it was just, what's happening?
That's magic. There's one part in that sequence when David Johansen's got the cat like halfway down his throat, and then he just puts his hands on his head, and he's just like, I don't even know. It's just like, should I give up? Should I keep trying? It makes that scene for me.
They're creeping up on you of Tales from the Dark Side, which is like kind of straightforward, and then just has this thing at the end that's so big and so memorable that it manages to stand out.
Yeah.
I liked it way more last night than I ever have before.
That's good. Yeah, I like it. It's my third favorite of the three segments, but I still like
mine
it
as well.
A lot. It's real, real good. And then it was supposed to be in Creepshow 2, but they removed it for budgetary reasons.
Oh, interesting.
So that was something that was I thought was interesting in the trivia there. But like this also, when I saw it, I didn't know like the history of who David Johansen was.
Okay.
So I kind of knew him from Scrooged and like this. And then I was aware
was
of
your mind
Bustle.
Blown when you discovered the New York Dolls and Blondie? You're just like, the whole cast of Tales from the Dark Side were these seminal, influential punk musicians?
Well, I didn't know anything about New York Dolls. I knew about Buster Poindexter.
James Remar was in the Sex Pistols. Yeah.
Ray Don Chung was in the Squeeze. Robert Klein was was Joy Division.
Robert Klein's original name, Darby Crash.
Oh my goodness. I saw that movie with Shane West.
Did you really?
Yeah, it wasn't very good.
I used to own some Germs albums, and then I realized I don't ever listen to these, and I sold them.
Yeah, I went through a big like Joy Division, like Sex Pistols phase.
Nice.
About, I don't know. Like, it was around the time Control came out.
Okay.
Anyways, so I knew of David Johansen from like Hot, Hot, Hot. And right. I thought Buster Poindexter was like way bigger than I think he was. Like, I thought he was like Sinatra big. Like, for a while. So I remember
Buster Poindexter's doing a residency in Vegas.
So I remember not knowing that it was like a Chris Gaines thing. I thought that he was like Dean Martin, like he would have been in Ocean's 11. Like, I was just like, Buster Poindexter's in this? Wow, what a coup.
Was your mind blown when you saw Free Jack and you're like, holy shit, they got BP?
Yeah, yeah. It's like,
and Mick Jagger.
It's like, I get if David Johansen's, you know, only to this level because he's the Miley Cyrus, but the Hannah Montana is the Buster Poindexter.
Yeah.
So yeah, Camp from Hell's good,
and the only one written by Stephen King.
Yes, it is, because the other two are Michael McDowell, who did Beetlejuice,
right, and Romero,
and it's based on Arthur Conan Doyle.
Yeah,
yeah, who wrote the Bible.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So that was your number six, right?
That was my 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That was my 7.
That was your 7?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. My number 5 is The Hitchhiker. So we
what
can
was
talk
your
about
six?
That. Father's Day.
But higher on mine.
Yeah.
And your 5
is The Hitchhiker.
Is The Hitchhiker, which was lower on mine.
Yes. So The Hitchhiker is The Hitchhiker is my favorite segment in Creepshow 2.
Okay.
And it's because I think it's really funny after a while.
Yeah.
And I think
I agree
that,
with that
Lois Chiles is awesome in that segment. She's like this one percenter delusional, like just cares about getting out of trouble and like I want this to go away. Like, she has no concern over the fact that she, you know, runs over Tom Wright, who also plays the same character in Tales from the Hood.
Right.
But, like, the thing that I find so funny is just it just keeps going and going and going. And there's, like, all these scenes where she must, like, run her car down, like, 70 hills and, like, crash into a tree, like, multiple times. And there's at one point where, like, Tom Wright is just hanging on her hood and he's just, like, she's just driving downhill, and he's going to get smashed, but he's still, like, just pounding on the hood of the car and everything, and it's just, like, it's like a Family Guy joke where it just goes on for so long that it becomes really funny, and then, like, especially when he's saying, like, thanks for the ride, lady, over and over and over again, but then eventually he just has a sign that just says, you killed me. And it's great, like, makeup effects, or he just gets more and
boy,
more
does he get
beat up.
Jacked up.
Yeah, so I find this one to be, in the EC Comics sense, the most kind of gratifying because she gets her comeuppance and it's fun and it's silly and everything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's again, it's comparable to something like They're Creeping Up on You, where we just take this one terrible character,
yeah,
and really punish them, you know, and the joke of it that it just will not let her off the hook is very funny. The thing that knocks it down a little bit for me is just that there really isn't a punchline. And that's sometimes important to me in some of these segments.
So you don't consider the fact that her husband is the guy who called in the hit and run as a punchline? It's kind of a weak punchline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I just, I change depending on the segment. Sometimes I want a punchline. Sometimes I don't care that there's one, you know, because there's a segment that's coming up next for me that's a little bit higher that doesn't have much of a punchline.
Yeah.
Sometimes I want it to be about the wicked being punished. Sometimes I don't care that that's not exactly what it is. So it depends on the segment. Sometimes I'm responding to different things. I don't have hard and fast rules for what it should be. But yeah, that's probably my second favorite segment in Creepshow 2.
Okay.
But it's a fun one. And like you said, the makeup effects are really, really good. And it is very funny. And you get the Stephen King cameo.
And it's like this classic horror conceit. I feel like every like anthology TV show, like The Twilight Zone definitely did this with the hitchhiker episode and everything like that. It's just like money in the bank. You always do a hitchhiker episode.
Right.
So yeah, it's good stuff.
All right. So somehow I'm only at six. You're on five and I'm
all over the place. Okay. So like, well, yeah. What's next?
For me, it's lot 249.
Okay. Let's just talk about them as we go. We hit them. That's number four on my list.
Okay. So, yeah. So we're pretty close. Close. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I enjoy this one, even though, just saying like, it doesn't really have a punchline. Lot 249 doesn't really have one. You know, the joke is like Christian Slater burned the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Who cares, you know, but, the kills are really fun. What elevates this one so much for me is obviously the cast.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, you have Christian Slater, who my wife, again, audibly kind of gasped and then went peak Slater. Like 1990 Christian Slater. Julianne Moore. Mark Sedgwick, is it? Kira Sedgwick's brother.
Oh, is that who that is?
Yeah.
Okay.
I probably have his name wrong, and I apologize for that. And Robert Sedgwick, I'm sorry, and Steve Buscemi.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, there's very few good mummy horrors.
I saw that in your 7-word review, and I made a note of it where I'm like, this might actually be one of the best mummy things I've ever seen.
It is. The mummy manages to be scary.
Yeah.
The kills are good because they're mummy related, you know. I enjoy the way this one is put together. I don't think it's as well directed as the other two segments. But I think it's really, really fun. And again, the cast is so entertaining that I end up loving it.
Yeah, I like it for a lot of reasons. The cast, obviously, like, is great. And then there's, like, one scene where, this was in my 7-word review, I love that, like, in his dorm, like, Christian Slater just wakes up and he's got, like, this emergency bag of Doritos
cool
on his
ranch,
bedside
baby.
Table. But he's also like, I forgot what song it is, but there's like a song on the radio where I'm just like, ooh, I got to check out what that song is. But it's like one of those like Wishmaster songs.
Song?
We're like, no, man, I love that song. That's peak Slater, Erica. I'm sorry. B-O-R. Bed of the Roses.
Stuffed into Julianne Moore's back.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. No kidding.
Brutal.
And then I like, yeah, there's like one part where Julianne Moore is like aerobicizing, and I'm like, she should aerobicize more often in movies, not get killed by glass houses.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Or what do they call those things?
Greenhouses?
Greenhouses.
Yeah.
You know, the glass house.
Glass houses.
I'm more of a Sobieski guy.
Growing plants out in the glass house.
you want to come out to my glass house?
Oh, man. The ozone layer is bad today. It's that glass house effect.
Ass out in the glass house. That doesn't even make sense. Anyways, yeah, the cast goes a long way in this one. I like the look of this one. This is another one where it feels very Castle Rocky.
Ooh, yeah, I could see that.
To me, so I like that aspect of it. And then I also, this is one where it's like the most quotable for me, because I remember like just as a kid, I watched this so much where I'm just like, I think I have a Zuni fetish. It was just always stuff like that.
I abhor Zuni aesthetic.
That was it. I abhor Zuni aesthetics. Every once in a while, I'll watch like a horror.
I loathe
Zuni aesthetics. Every once in a while, I'll watch one of these horror movies, and obviously, like, you know, this would suck if this happened in real life. But I kind of
started killing your friends and family.
Not my friends and family, but like, I kind of want some of this stuff to happen in my real life. Like, if I have the choice of like going to therapy every week and like being kind of sad all the time and like going to work and shit like that, or like, a mummy, like, it might be worth.
That was the original title of this segment, and then they changed it to Lot 249, but originally it was Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's a mummy.
All mummies. No, that's like, I was telling you and Rob, like, when I was watching The Grudge, I'm just like, you know what? It wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if I got haunted by a grudge if I went to Japan. Like, I would almost be disappointed if I didn't. Like, I want some, like, I'm like Sandra Bullock. I'm like, I just want some action.
Yeah.
I want some action. I want some horror action.
Yeah.
Anyways. So, yeah. Yeah. Lot 249. It's really good.
Yeah. That was my six.
Okay. So, I've got.
Are you on your, should I do my five?
Yeah,
so that
would have
matched
five.
Up. My five is The Raft. Where was that
That's
for
my
you?
My number nine.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's my second favorite from Creepshow 2.
Yeah, I think we just switched The Raft and The Hitchhiker, basically.
Yeah, I used to have The Raft way up there, and then now it's like the Me Too segment, and I have problems with it a little
bit. Oh, for sure. Yeah. I really struggled with that as I was ranking these. The only reason, because I don't even think it's super well executed, I think some of the effects are good.
Yeah.
And nightmarish, especially when...
It's like proto-blub.
Oh, for sure, yeah. When Paige from Shag is...
Was she the...
Melting. She's the first
the
one.
The first one, okay.
And she's saying it hurts.
Yeah.
That is the stuff of nightmares. Like,
yeah.
It's one thing to be killed by a blub, but it's another thing to be aware of what's happening to you and saying it hurts. That really disturbs me.
Yeah, I remembered that one for sure.
So it's not that it's even executed that well. I just think the concept is so interesting and so scary that you have nowhere to go. And then when it starts coming through the cracks, this idea that this thing is unavoidably going to get you, I think is so interesting. And the death of Cisco, I guess, is somebody in the 7-word reviews referred to him as Michael Bay.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It's so spectacular the way he kind of gets folded in half through the hole. It just has such highlights. Again, doesn't have much of a punchline. I don't think it's especially well executed because I don't think anything in Creepshow 2 is. But I think the concept is so good. And again, it's coming from a Stephen King short story. And some of the effects are great. But yeah, I mean, that stuff where he's kissing the girl when she's unconscious is disgusting and fucked up.
I think
that... And he doesn't pay for it. She does. Like in The Blob, at least that guy gets what's coming to him.
Yeah.
In this case, it doesn't. That's not the way it works.
Yeah. I mean, like, I guess it's in the... I don't think that they're... The reason why I can't give it credit is because I don't think they're aware that they're doing this, but it's sort of interesting that that character that you think is, like, the meek one...
He's our hero, right?
...is the one that's, like, the worst one.
Right. I agree. I don't think they are doing that on purpose.
Yeah, I don't think they're doing that on purpose either. But... And then also, like... Dude, you get to the beach at the end, it's like, maybe just run up the beach a little.
Keep going. Yeah. Don't stop and mock the blub.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is the first, I got one per each movie of what would you do?
Oh,
so, all right. You're on a raft.
Oh boy.
And there's a blub.
Yeah.
And you know that it's going to eat you painfully.
Yeah.
What would you do?
I don't know the answer to that. I would, I guess, just try to wait it out.
I think.
And eventually starve to death or, you know.
I think I probably would have, like, at least once tried to, like, paddle a little bit.
Okay.
I don't know why they never tried to paddle.
Well, the raft isn't, like, a floating raft. It's one of those, like, stationary things stuck out in the middle of the water.
Was it stationary?
I believe so, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then I probably would have just, like, tried to jump on the blub's back.
Why is sex the first thing on that guy's mind? It's like, there's a blub out there that's killed two of our friends. It's probably going to kill us.
I didn't get that
either.
Maybe
now's the time to fuck.
I didn't get that either. I thought that maybe he was, like, trying to sacrifice her as a diversion or something.
No, I don't think so at all.
Okay.
I think he just was like, now's my window to get laid, which makes him even more scummy.
Yeah. And, like, why would you ever... I would think that I'd have, like, mad shrinkage during that situation. Like, that wouldn't be even on my mind.
I think this one coasts on its reputation as being the best segment in Creepshow 2, and I realize I ranked it the highest of the segments in Creepshow 2, but I feel like people say Creepshow 2 is not that great except for the raft, and that's become one of those that's been, like, the accepted wisdom.
Yeah.
And I think it's maybe not as good as everyone says... But I still probably think it's the strongest of the segments.
I think it fits in perfectly with, like, the grossness of Creepshow 2.
Okay.
Like, Creepshow 2 feels real, like, gross to me as a movie. It's
okay.
Like Pet Sematary 2, where you're just, like, you just kind of want to take a shower after it's over. So I think, like, it kind of works as part of that piece. It would also fit in, like, VHS.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I could see that.
So, but yeah, I mean, because I was sort of like that too, where I thought like it was, I agreed with the accepted wisdom that it was the best one. But now I don't know. I think like once the initial, I don't know what it is. Maybe I saw Creepshow 2 before I saw The Blob 88, and then I saw The Blob 88, and I'm like, oh, that's how you do it.
Oh, for sure.
Which, by the way, I rewatched that over the weekend.
Oh, man.
It gets, not that it was ever, like, not great. It gets better and better and better.
It does.
It's just amazing.
Yeah.
And I love, like, my boy Darabont hasn't made anything in a while. Can we just get him and Chuck Russell back together?
I wish.
Can they just keep doing movies for each other?
I wish, but you got to give them a budget. And that's part of the problem is that, you know, they're not giving Chuck Russell budgets anymore.
Well, if I win the lottery, that's my first thing. I'm going to run a Blub production company. I'm like, you only make Freddy and Blub movies. That's it.
I didn't mind Scorpion King.
Oh, I didn't see it. Oh,
okay.
You can make
the Chuck Russell joint where he still had some money.
Or I'll be like, can you find a way to make the Coco Bongo have the Blub in it?
Blub.
And Freddy's there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Remake The Mask, only instead of The Mask, it's the Blub.
Yeah. He's got the Blub on his face.
And Cameron Diaz never gets eaten. That's the rule.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah. Yeah. I love it.
This is great. You need to win the lottery now.
Well, sometimes we will these things into existence, like Hobbs and Shaw.
That's true.
Like, can we get Russell and Darabont and Blub?
Now we're going to regret it somehow.
Yeah.
Like Hobbs and Shaw.
Or like Tales from the Hood 2, where it'll come back and it's just not in the version that we want at all. Anyways,
I recently saw a ranking of some of the best horror movies of the 2000s, and someone included Tales from the Hood 2.
I need you to send me the link to this.
I think it was a tweet. I'd be hard pressed to remember who it was, although it was like somebody with a name.
Good for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hope the check is in the mail. All right, so what's next on yours?
My number 4 is Father's Day.
That's my number 6.
Okay,
but it
so
could
once
have very
again,
easily
we're pretty
been,
close.
Yeah, it could have very easily been up there. I really like Father's Day for a lot of reasons. One of them is I've grown to really love Vivian Lindfors' portrayal of Bedelia, especially
you
her drunken speech.
Bitch. You bitch.
She's just like, I had a man, I loved him. She's like, and whoa. Like, all that stuff is, like, amazing.
Vivica Lindfors?
Yeah.
Right? Is that something like that?
Yeah, and I think she was in Exorcist 3 also.
Well, see?
Yeah.
More love for Exorcist 3.
Exactly, yeah. And then Don't Let Go, Song and Dance. I mean, I love that song. It's good.
She's in Stargate.
Is she?
And I believe she's in The Sure Thing. Isn't she Cusack's teacher in The Sure Thing?
Sounds right.
Yeah. She
I had a man, I had a man, and I loved him, and you, and oh.
Yeah, I feel like Father's Day is the one that gets to the heart of the whole EC Comics vibe the most. You know, it's sort of the most representative of the spirit of Creepshow.
Mm-hmm.
Again, pretty straightforward. Doesn't have a big twist, but has maybe the best punchline of all of them.
Yeah.
That
woman's scary too. Like, I don't mean to like be like the woman's scary looking, but the woman's scary looking.
She's heavy lidded, that's all. She's heavy of eyelid.
Yeah. One thing I love about this sequence, and they do this in the show, and they do this in some of the other segments of the movie, but they do like all that cool stuff with the lighting.
Yes.
And the backlighting turns into like the comic,
yes,
kind of starbursts and things like that. I love just like throughout the segment, just, you know, these blue lights and these pink lights and everything like that. It's just, it adds so much to it with the ambiance and everything. And then, all right. He walks out with the Sylvia cake.
Yeah.
And you're, you know, one of the two, the brother and sister.
All right.
What do you do? Like, you could probably run away.
Yeah, I think that's probably what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
I think.
I would totally run away. Yeah. I'm wondering, like,
do we sing happy birthday first, or do you just run away?
I mean, I would sing it while I was running away.
Okay, that makes sense.
But, like, do they feel like, oh, no, like, we can't go anywhere, he's going to follow us? Or is it, like, only on this estate?
I mean, I feel like if it goes, if it just went a few more seconds, they'd probably run away.
Okay. All right.
And they don't really need to die, right? I mean,
no.
They didn't do anything.
Neither did Ed Harris, though.
Well, he was in the graveyard. That's his own fault.
That's
just
true.
Wrong place, wrong time.
Yeah. After that, I stopped lying down in cemeteries.
No, that was, you're making the right call there. It's very dangerous.
Yeah. I mean, like, those things are heavy.
Another segment that is perfectly placed. Really, everything in Creepshow is perfectly placed.
Yeah.
But starting off with this one is such a good idea. Because, like we said, because it gets the spirit of the thing so right that immediately you know exactly what movie you're in.
Yeah. It's like, no pun intended, but it's like the party segment, basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like when you, I haven't listened to the whole thing yet, but when you and Elric and Brian did the horror marathon episode.
Yes, Pure Cinema,
Pure
baby.
And like you have to start out with the blub because that's your kickoff.
Right.
Yeah. Father's Day is like it that is. As far as Creepshow. It's the one that gets everybody hooked and in the right spirit for the rest of the thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. So you're number three.
So my number three is The Crate.
Okay. I think our two and three are probably switched.
Okay.
My three is Lover's Vow.
Okay. That's higher on my list.
Okay.
Okay.
My two is The Crate.
Okay.
So let's talk about The Crate.
Let's do
which used to be my favorite segment in Creepshow.
Yeah.
And is lower now.
Mm-hmm. It used to be my favorite in Creepshow also.
I have a different favorite.
Yeah.
It's kind of the centerpiece of Creepshow.
Yeah, it's the longest. It's like 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great monster.
Oh, my
great
God.
Great performances from Hal Holbrook and...
Fritz Weaver
and Adrian Barbeau.
I love their friendship dynamic in it. It's really... Like, it feels very lived in. Like, there could have been like five movies about this guy's, these guys' friendship before leading up to this.
And it's the one that feels the most like someone telling you a story as opposed to Father's Day, which is constructed more like a joke with just kind of a setup and a punchline. And some of the other segments are set up the same way. The Crate feels like it unfolds more like a short story.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little less gimmicky than some of the other ones, but I think it's the better for it.
Yeah.
Just really strong storytelling, probably the most serious of all of them, even though Romero's still having a ton of fun, obviously.
Yeah, and Adrian Barbeau is like on another planet. Great. It's just one of those, like, there's a lot of meat to chew on in that performance. I've never seen her in anything where I've liked her more. She's just so funny.
Yeah.
I like the beat that they have in the movie where there's the running joke. It's like, what would I do without you, Billy? And then, like, you wonder, like, why is he with this woman? And she kind of says, like, I don't know what I would do without you either. And it's like, oh, okay, that's why he's still around.
Right.
It's like, she has moments.
Right.
Very rare, but, like, she has just enough where he's sticking around. And I like that they included that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, like you said, I mean... The creature's great. Every time I go on Expedition Everest in Disney World, I am secretly hoping Fluffy's there somewhere.
And that was Tom Savini's first real monster, I believe.
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I mean, just its teeth and stuff like that. It's great. I love the last shot, too, where...
The eyes opening the under the water.
The eyes opening up out of the water and all that. I like this segment so much that like I hone in on like little stupid things now, too, where... Like, the opening is, like, the janitor flipping the quarter, and then it rolls into the grate underneath the stairs. And then he just goes, oh, that was my last quarter for the Coke machine. And I'm like, oh, man, I wish he didn't die and he got that Coke. It's like, you just really care about these people.
Also, were Cokes a quarter?
Back in 82, I guess.
Wow.
One thing also that I really like about this is that I thought this a lot when I was in school, but like when it's late at night and you're leaving like a lecture hall.
Yeah.
Those are spooky places.
Sure.
And it's a really good setting for like a horror story where it's just like these isolated, you know, areas and everything. I thought it was great.
Yeah, it's a great one.
Yeah.
I thought we were going to have the same number one. I don't think we are.
I think
our one and two are flipped.
No. So I'll go with my number one first because that's your number three. And then my number two, I think, is your number one.
Yeah.
So my number one is Lover's Vow from Tales from the Dark Side.
Yeah.
Which we brought this up earlier. It is the same story as a segment in Qui-Gon. I think it's better here. Not that it's a competition.
I haven't seen Qui-Gon in too long of a time to make that assessment.
Qui-Gon's good, but like I think that I need to rewatch it. But I think like I kind of got it halfway through,
okay.
And then
is that because you had seen Tales from the Dark Side?
No. It's not that I got the twist. I meant more like with Qui-Gon, I kind of picked up on its vibe,
Then
I could go back and probably watch it from the beginning and feel that same way about the whole thing as I did about the second half.
I see what you're saying.
Because it's very, like, it's not about the EC Comics.
Right.
Punchline or anything like that, or the reveal. It's all about, like, this meditative state and, like, kind of taking in this imagery and things like that and sort of being, transported by it. Whereas... I just think the story of Lover's Vow makes very little sense. Like... It's one of the things I kind of actually like about it. It's like, what is the gargoyle's plan? Like, does it just say, like, I'm bored?
James Remar.
It's just like, does it just say I'm bored? I think I'm going to come down from my building tonight, kill a guy, give another guy a proposition, and then if he does... And then
the great thing, none of it was planned out. No, just really going on the fly.
Just, yeah, exactly. But I mean... That fucking gargoyle design.
Yeah, it's great.
Is unbelievable. And then...
So the credits, K&B did the effects in the movie, but then there's like consultant credit by Dick Smith.
Yeah.
So what do you suppose Dick Smith is responsible for? The gargoyle?
I would think so.
Okay.
Yeah. The mummy?
Nothing else in the movie is that effects heavy.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just the cat coming out of Buster Poindexter, the mummy, and the gargoyles.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, the gargoyle design is great. And then the gargoyle kids, one of them is on display was a few years ago at the Museum of the Weird in Austin, Texas.
I was just there and I don't feel like I saw it.
If you go on the tour.
I did not go on the tour.
It's in there.
Got it.
With like the other oddities and stuff like that. And I always want to buy it. But I know that it wouldn't make it if it got shipped. But this is one where I think, like, I could watch, like, a whole movie about Lover's Vow, and I would love it. And I'm a fan of Remar. He's very weird, but, like, I like it, and I think it works for this. There's a lot of, what should we call it, little bits that I've, like, repeated over and over again. Like, my friend John and I sometimes will just be like, you promised you'd never tell. I loved you. It's just like... It's our lexicon. It's great. I don't know. Yeah, it's like sad, and I think that's why it resonates with me more. It's not just like a kind of a goofy story. It's like this tragic story.
Right.
And it's the right one to leave the movie on, because it kind of has a lingering effect that Lot 249 and Cat from Hell don't have.
Right.
It's another situation of what would you do? I think I probably would have told Ray Don Chong within like a month. So I'm impressed that he lasted 10 years of being like, hey, this crazy thing happened the night that we met.
I don't know. Part of me wonders if I ever would have. I might be able to repress that for my entire life.
I probably would have said it on like a podcast.
Then I would turn into a gargoyle.
Yeah.
You promised.
And then I would be like,
brought
yes.
to you by Squarespace. Design your own site.
It's like, I'm turning into Carly Kloss. I'm showing you how to design a website through Wix.
My undies. Anyway, yeah, it's kind of like
Casper Mattresses.
They all sound like a version of Don Pardo. Also, the gargoyle is Don Pardo.
Yeah.
Promise you'll never tell.
I would have cooked you Hello Fresh. I loved you.
Use the coupon code Never Tell.
You idiot.
Mark Maron is totally a gargoyle.
Oh, for
just
sure.
Just waiting for his moment. Mm-hmm. It's the classiest segment of all of them, I think.
Yeah.
The effects are amazing. Mm-hmm. It like the crate, it's the one that tells the most complete story.
Yeah.
And it feels like almost there's an entire movie's worth of story in mm-hmm. just that segment. It's very economical in the way that it's done because
yeah.
it doesn't feel rushed or like, hey, that should have been a feature, which isn't to say that it couldn't be a feature, mm-hmm. but I don't feel cheated by the fact
yeah.
that it's only a short.
It feels like it could have been like an hour-long Masters of Horror, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. It's just that the middle section would be so like boring, you know, because you have the amazing opening.
Right.
You have the finish, and both of those things make sense, but the mm-hmm. whole middle has to be just like the ordinary, like, I'm living my life, everything's going great.
Mm-hmm. I misremembered something with the segment, though. I thought that his art career took off because he was doing gargoyle art, but he just never told anybody,
right.
like, where he got his inspiration from.
Right.
So I was surprised to see this time that he's, like, he kept all that stuff hidden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
It really is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's my favorite in Tales from the Dark Side. I had it at 3.
If they ever do a photo op with Remar at a con, they better have the gargoyle in the background.
For sure.
Yeah.
Radon Chong photo op in costume.
Oh, my goodness.
With the two little baby gargoyles.
Oh, man. I'd be in heaven. It's that would be my number 2 photo op. My number 1 photo op is to do like one of those Scream cast ones, but we have to line up like they are on the poster.
Oh, nice.
Like that has
in
to
front
be
of
done.
A black background.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
Did you see the Sleepaway Camp photo op at Days of the Dead?
I saw that there was one. Yeah.
It's Felissa Rose and Meg.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Meg, I've never seen doing conventions before, so I was surprised.
What's the name of the character, the owner of the camp who has the thing for Meg?
I can't remember.
Because he's in Just Before Dawn.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
He sure is.
Yeah.
He looks like a Dick Tracy villain also.
Yeah, he sure does.
He's another one that has yeah. that kind of a face.
He looks like a gargoyle
like
turned
Lou
into
or
him.
Something. He's got Mel. Is it Mel?
Yeah, it is Mel. Yeah.
Mel and Meg. That doesn't work.
Yeah.
I can never ship them.
Yeah, that would be amazing if, like, the gargoyle flies up to the top of the building and then Mel's up there, too.
Find your own ledge.
Yeah. He's my Remar.
I'm here waiting for my Meg.
He goes to see the Meg and he's like, this is false advertising. What a jip. I'm going back to the camp. One night out, and I picked the wrong flick. I should have picked Crazy Rich Asians. I should have read the reviews.
Oh, Mel, you fool.
Yeah.
So my number 1 is your number 2?
Yes.
And that is Something to Tide You Over from
uh-huh.
Creepshow.
Yeah.
Which just last year became my number 1 when we watched mm-hmm. it. After Scream Factory put out the Blu-ray, we watched it for Scary Movie Night.
Yep.
And it had never played better for me.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it gets the EC Comics thing so right, the way that Father's Day does, but with a story that's a little bit more sophisticated, a little bit more fleshed out. And
yeah. I think Leslie Nielsen's performance is pretty incredible because he's not, like, acting against type, but he's sort of subverting. He's, like, kind of just dialing it in a different direction of like what he's done in so many other movies, especially after Creepshow, where he's just this avuncular kind of guy, but just so evil at the same time. This one looked like it would be like really uncomfortable to shoot.
Yeah.
Like I felt bad for just actors, Ted Danson and Galen Ross.
Yeah, how much water they had to get in their faces. I remember as a kid, the shot of Ted Danson when he's finally all the way underwater.
Oh, yeah.
And his eyes get kind of wide and the light changes behind him. I don't know why I thought this. I was positive his head was going to explode.
I can see that. It does.
As a kid, I didn't understand how water pressure worked or drowning, apparently. Mm-hmm. I was just like, oh, his head's going to explode. That's where this is going. And it never did, thank goodness.
Every time I see that shot, I think he looks like Martin Riggs.
Oh, yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. I kind of, like, the fish tank in my dentist office sort of looks like that. I always sort of am hoping that Ted Danson...
Somebody should make a fish tank with, like, a Ted Danson head in it.
Yeah, you would think so.
Right? And just let some fish swim around.
For sure.
I would buy that fish tank.
Mm-hmm. The fish would be like, I get that reference. This guy watches Creepshow all the time. I understand that.
Creepshow is, like, one of my favorite horror movies. I think it's so...
It's really
perfect.
Fun. Yeah, it's really, really good. I was always confused by Leslie Nielsen when, like, he's being haunted by the waterlogged seaweed ghost.
Right.
He's just always going, Wentworth! Wentworth! And then he's always calling Ted Danson Harry before that. So I never knew, like, it was Harry Wentworth. So I'm just like, is there another guy?
Wentworth is his butler. He's calling for his butler.
Yeah, but it's just, like, it's so Drebin-y where he's just like, Wentworth! Right. Wentworth! So, yeah, but the makeup effects on this one, too.
Love it. Just,
I mean, that's exactly how I picture those types of people people would look. But, yeah, it's good. It's real, real good. And
love
the punchline of it is amazing.
It is great.
Because even to his death, he's just a dick.
Right.
Yeah.
I love the effects that they put on the vocals of the drowned couple.
Yes. Yeah, that makes it. Yeah.
And it has that great jump scare.
Mm-hmm.
Where he turns around and they're right there and he screams and starts laughing. It's so great.
Yeah, I love when they get shot and just like the water just drips out of them and everything. And yeah, they just sound like garbled because they're all the water's still in them. Yeah, it's good. It's real, real good. So in these rewatches of Creepshow, Creepshow 2, and Tales from the Dark Side of the Movie, did they go up or lower in your estimation? Obviously, Creepshow probably was where it was always.
Yeah, Creepshow didn't really change. Yeah. Tales from the Dark Side, I think, went up a little bit only because I liked Cat from Hell way more.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, used to be the weak point.
Mm-hmm.
And now I see it as a movie that doesn't really have a weak point.
Yeah.
Creepshow 2 kind of stayed the same. It actually might have gone down a little bit because the raft is not even as good as I thought it was.
Yeah, I think I had a similar experience. Although Tales from the Dark Side, I'm
Tales from the Dark Side is your number one.
It's my number
three,
one of those three, but I think I'm kind of coming out of it's not just nostalgia, it's just really, really good.
Yeah, for sure.
So but yeah, I remember that was a movie that I was at the theater, it was at Town and Country Theater, and like that came out that weekend, and like at Town and Country they always had the new movies like in the two middle theaters. So right when you were walking in, you could see what was in the two middle theaters, and then the older stuff was off to the sides. And I remember I was going to see, like, Ninja Turtles again.
Nice.
And then I saw the poster for Tales from the Dark Side, the movie, and it's got, like, this kind of bat creature thing, like mm-hmm. reading a book.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of those posters, like Wishmaster, where, like, I felt, like, chemically changed while I was looking at it. I'm just like, what the fuck is that? Like, that is where I want to be right now. That movie looks incredible and everything. And, yeah, so, I mean, like, I'm always going to love it just because after the Monster Squad and Universal Monsters, the next wave was Tales from the Crypt and Tales from the Dark Side. And it without those, like, I don't know if I would be where I am now with my fandom. So it's always going to really mean a lot to me.
Did you ever watch the show Tales from the Dark Side?
No, I was actually going to ask you about that because, like, I've never gone back and watched it.
I own the series on DVD. Mm. I've probably watched the first two or three episodes a couple of times.
Yeah.
And never gotten further. Not because I don't like it. It just something comes up and I start doing something else, and then mm-hmm. I decide to watch it again and start again at the beginning. So I've seen the first episodes a handful of times.
Yeah. There's not like a really good transfer of it.
No.
And that kind of keeps me back a little bit too. It's sort of, there is like another show that's sort of like that also, but, and also while we're at it, can we get Blu-rays of Tales from the Crypt, please?
That would be nice.
And also, can we get like the entire Siskel and Ebert on Blu-ray? I don't think that will ever happen just because of the clips.
Probably not.
But they used to have a site that was SiskelandEbert.org, and they would have full episodes, and like that got taken down.
It got taken down?
Yeah. And it was like this amazing archive, and now you have to just get lucky finding videos on YouTube.
Just
of, like,
go in and edit
reviews.
Out the clips and just have their conversations. They'd be fine by me.
Yeah. I was rewatching a lot of like Siskel and Ebert reviews of horror movies, and man, they hate everything.
Yeah, they got it wrong a lot.
They got it wrong all the time with that genre. But the Creepshow Shudder series, I think you like it a little bit more than I do.
I liked the second episode.
Okay.
I was not thrilled about the first episode.
I think the series, the third episode, I think, like the first segment, the one that you watched about the Halloween.
Yeah.
That felt out of Tales of Halloween to me.
Sure.
So I enjoyed it. And then the second segment is...
That's John Harrison again, right? No, yeah. Bruckner.
Yeah.
Harrison's the first segment.
The second segment is the Bruckner one.
Okay.
I want to talk to you after you see the second one.
Okay.
It's got like kind of a Chief Woodenhead...
Oh, boy.
...kind of problematic thing, okay. I think, a little bit. But that maybe is just me. But the actual story is pretty fun, I guess. Okay. It's just some of the casting in what these people represent in this short is a little weird. And then, but the first two episodes for me, the big problem I had with it was just like, I think they really whiff on a lot of the endings. Either they're not pacing it out well enough, but they all feel like anticlimactic. Like the one in episode one that I kind of liked, the dollhouse one.
It was interesting.
And then it just stops.
Yeah.
It's like they just give up.
Yeah.
I'm like, that can't be the end. That can't be like how you resolve this story. So that was sort of bothering me. And but you know, if they incrementally get better, then I'll be happy with it. It's nice that there's a horror anthology show on TV again.
Yeah, for sure. I get excited each time a new one comes out, and I haven't gotten around to watching them like the day they come out because it's October and there's so much else to watch.
Right.
But I liked the werewolf one. I mean, it's basically Dog Soldiers, but...
I didn't like that one just because it gave me Overlord vibes, and I really didn't like Overlord.
I still haven't seen Overlord, so...
Gives me a headache.
But it leaned into like the Creepshow aesthetic for the first time, because I didn't really feel like the first episode did. And this one got real comic booky with the lighting and the transitions and all that. And then I actually thought the DJ Qualls one was really, really strong. I really liked that one.
Okay. Yeah, I the only thing I didn't like about the DJ Qualls one was that it does the thing that I don't... It's something that I've noticed that I really don't like is when it starts... like two-thirds in and they're like, I bet you're wondering how I got here.
And
that kind of took me out of it.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Anyway, this was fun. Thank you.
Yeah, hopefully this wasn't like crazy to listen to for people, but
should we do our rankings from like top to bottom?
Sure.
Just go through them again?
Sure, why not? And then, everybody, just if you haven't seen these movies, check them out. They're fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Read through your rankings one more time from 1 to 14.
All right. Number 1 is Lover's Vow from Tales from the Dark Side. Number 2 is Something to Tide You Over from Creepshow. Number 3 is The Crate from Creepshow. Number 4 is Lot 249 from Tales from the Dark Side. Number 5 is The Hitchhiker from Creepshow 2. Number 6 is Father's Day from Creepshow. Mm-hmm. 7 is Creepshow Prologue and Epilogue. 8 is the intro and epilogue from Tales from the Dark Side. 9 is The Raft from Creepshow 2. 10 is Cat from Hell, which now I probably would put higher, from Tales from the Dark Side. 11 is the prologue, interludes, epilogue weirdness of Creepshow 2.
The cartoon one.
Camp Candy.
12, Camp Candy from Creepshow 2.
12 is, which by the way, one of the reasons why I like Broken Lizard is Kevin Heffernan, I swear, is reincarnated John Candy. 12 is The Lonesome Death of Jordy Verrill from Creepshow. 13 is They're Creeping Up on You from Creepshow, and 14 is Old Chief Woodenhead from Creepshow 2.
Amazingly, we only matched on one.
That is
so
weird.
And that is our 14. Yeah. We both agree Chief Woodenhead is the worst of the worst.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
And that's really the only one of all of these that I dislike. Like, the rest I like in different degrees.
Yeah.
The only one I feel like, oh, that's a bad segment, is Chief Woodenhead.
Old Chief Woodenhead is like what you would watch when you have mono at 5 on a Sunday.
Yeah. All right.
And you're stuck in the desert.
Yeah. I think I'd rather just have mono.
Yeah.
My number one is The Crate from... Just kidding. Let me scroll up a little higher. My number one is Something to Tide You Over from Creepshow. 2, The Crate from Creepshow. 3, Lover's Vow from Tales from the Dark Side. So our 1 through 3 are the same, just in a different order.
Yeah.
But we agree on what the 3 best are. Mm-hmm. My number 4, Father's Day from Creepshow. My 5 is The Raft from Creepshow 2, which after talking about it, I would probably put lower. My 6 is Lot 249 from Tales from the Dark Side. My 7 is The Cat from Hell from Tales from the Dark Side. My 8, They're Creeping Up on You from Creepshow. My 9, The Hitchhiker from Creepshow 2. My 10, The Lonesome Death of Jordy Verrill from Creepshow. 11, The Wraparound Story from Tales from the Dark Side. 12, The Wraparound Segment from Creepshow. 13, The Wraparound Segment from Creepshow 2. And at last place, at 14, Old Chief Woodenhead from Creepshow 2.
Sorry, George Kennedy.
I'm not. He's bad in that segment.
Yeah. He's still getting shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's still stumbling around, looking confused.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's not good. Even the Chief Woodenhead effect is not good.
Mm-hmm. For those of you with kids, say like 10 and under, I would highly recommend watching Tales from the Dark Side, the movie, with them, because that's how they'll learn about Debbie Harry and
that's right.
David Johansen.
You have to teach them the history of music, and you do that with Tales from the Dark Side, the movie.
Exactly.
Thank you guys very much for listening. Thank you for continually doing the Scary Movie Challenge. Please keep doing it. Go to fthismovie.com for scary movie content every day and to keep writing in your 7-word reviews. We got half of a Scary Movie month left to go. I'm excited.
Yeah. It's been great so far. And all of you guys have really helped just make it. Every October is great, and this is no different. And we all love you, and have a great rest of your October.
Thanks, Adam.
Listening to FS Movie.